Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On the day Charlie Kirk was shot and killed in Utah, September 11th, there was a shooting at Evergreen High School in the Denver suburb of Evergreen. Two students were shot and critically injured. Authorities said the 16-year-old suspect, who died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, was radicalized by an extremist network and that he fired 20 rounds in a 9-minute attack, according to NBC. There have been more than 160 school shootings this year, according to the K-12 school shooting database. We wanted to know what other shootings happened that we might not have heard about. So we took a look, and here's what we found. This is what happened just over the last week. On Saturday, I'm sure you've heard about these two, three people were shot and killed, and eight were injured at a pub and music venue in Southport, North Carolina. Also on Saturday, two men were killed in separate shootings in Hartford, Connecticut. On Sunday, four people were shot and killed and eight were injured at a church in Grand Blanc, Michigan. According to reports, the gunman crashed his truck into a church wall, and then people rushed toward him to help him, thinking the crash was an accident, and then he began firing. Also on Sunday, one person was shot and killed, and one person was injured after a shooting in an Albertsons parking lot in Wolf Point, Montana. On Tuesday, a man was killed and a 16-year-old girl was critically injured in a shooting in Baltimore, Maryland. Yesterday, a 6-year-old was shot while riding in a car on a Chicago freeway. Also yesterday, a shot rang out after a fight between two men in a Costco parking lot in Davie, Florida. And here are a few facts about gun violence in this country. 327 people are shot every day. Of those, 117 will die. That is according to Brady. Gun violence is now the leading cause of death for children and teens in this country. More and more older Americans are dying by firearm suicide, according to the Trace and GQ. Older white men and those in rural areas experience alarmingly high rates. So given the level of gun violence in this country, what happened to the conversation about gun control? And this is something that we are asking on a regular basis and will continue to ask. We're once again joined by Lindsay Nichols, Policy Director at the Giffords Law Center, an organization whose mission is to end gun violence. Giffords fights to end the gun lobby's stranglehold on the U.S. political system. And we should say, according to Open Secrets, the NRA and the gun lobby gave to Democrats and Republicans. But if you look at their spreadsheet, now the overwhelming majority of that money goes to Republicans. As a leading advocate for gun violence prevention for over a decade, Lindsay Nichols has played an essential role in drafting many of the laws addressing the epidemic of gun violence in the U.S. Hi, Lindsay. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. I just wonder, what is going on? Why aren't we spending more time talking about gun control?
That's an excellent question. And obviously, as you pointed out, this is an ongoing issue. I think that the national media is understandably interested in what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what the Trump administration is doing on a range of issues. And I think also what's going on is that this is such, gun violence is an issue with so much pain and tragedy involved. It can be easy to feel hopeless. The problem is that's exactly what the gun lobby wants us to feel. And we should be talking about strengthening our gun safety laws. Lawmakers have a responsibility to pass the kinds of common sense laws that could make these deadly attacks less likely. Because we know that this kind of gun violence is preventable and everyone deserves the right to feel safe leaving their home. So it may be surprising for many people to know that we do consider ourselves to be making progress on this issue, not just at the federal level, where we passed the first federal gun law in 2022, in 30 years. We hadn't passed any sort of new gun law, and we did that under the Biden administration. I think what's happening now in DC is, with respect to gun violence specifically, is this sense that Democrats are still trying to talk about something that Republicans hoped would go away with this law. But it's not something that's going away. As we have seen day in and day out, gun violence is something that continues to touch American lives. And there is so much more that we could be doing. And we are seeing leaders in some communities take up that mantle, but in other groups, we're not.
For those of us who are not familiar with that federal law, can you tell us about it?
Sure. So the federal law is called the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. It was signed by President Biden into law in June of 2022. It includes a number of different provisions. It's a far or a wide range of different policies were included in that bill. It created the first new gun trafficking statute, making gun traffickers subject to criminal penalties. Until that time, we didn't have a federal gun trafficking law. So that was a big step forward. It included funding for a number of programs that support mental health through schools. So that school-based social workers and other kinds of anti-violence programs, community-based violence intervention programs were funded through that new law. It provided funding for states to implement their red flag laws that enable community members to ensure that people who are in having a crisis don't have access to firearms that they might use to help someone, to hurt someone. That was important federal funding to help states implement those laws. Laws to keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers was part of that law as well. So, and laws to strengthen the background check system with regard to people under age 21 who are trying to buy guns, to make sure that people who aren't ready to own a gun don't have easy access to them. So there's a whole range of policy issues included in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, and it was a big accomplishment.
Okay, so then we have to go to 2025 with Donald Trump in office. And you all at Giffords put out a very long piece in July called Tracking Trump's Disastrous Record on Guns. And also, Lindsay, I have to say, it's pretty shocking that when there are stories about these horrific shootings, it would just take the host or the reporter to spend 30 seconds talking about what Trump has done. And I'm just not hearing this. So let's go through a few of these things because this is so important. And then you can elaborate on what you'd like. And then if any of you hear something, because there's a lot, and you'd like us to elaborate, please give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So I don't know what this is, so thank you for educating us. You all report that Trump ended the pistol brace rule. In 2023, the ATF published a rule clarifying whether certain products marketed as stabilizing braces were covered by the National Firearms Act. The gun lobby deceptively sold devices designed to convert pistols into illegal concealable short-barreled rifles as stabilizing braces. And shortly after the ATF rule was finalized, the gun lobby filed a challenge, and the case made its way up the courts. Trump's DOJ gave in and dismissed the appeal on July 17th. I still don't understand this. What is the pistol brace rule?
So this is a, and people from California may actually have a harder time understanding this because California has an assault weapons ban. And so these pistol braces weren't a big issue and don't in California because California has a strong state law that sort of encompasses this issue. In other states that don't have an assault weapon ban, there are these essentially assault pistols that are available. They're relatively small weapons that sort of look a bit like a rifle, but they're not as long as a rifle. Because they're not as long as a rifle, they can be it's harder to shoot straight with them. Certainly if you're trying to shoot a number of rounds at once. These stabilizing braces, when they're attached to these weapons, basically make them into assault rifles. And that makes them easier to shoot a number of times. It also obviously makes them very dangerous if they get into the wrong hands. The rule was very specific about the sort of technical parameters of these braces because sometimes some of the braces are legitimately designed to help people with disabilities engage in shooting sports, but some of them are not. Some of them actually turn these short-barreled, they turn these weapons into short-barreled rifles, which are subject to greater regulation at the federal level. They are required to be registered with ATF, the federal agency, which most guns are not subject to that regulation. So that is what the rule did, sort of made these distinctions so that the most dangerous of these weapons were subject to this greater government regulation. The Trump administration has, through giving up in litigation and through actually repealing, is starting to actually repeal the rule. They're walking this back, making again these unusually dangerous firearms widely accessible.
Giffords also points out that Trump plans to slash gun regulations at the ATF. The Washington Post reports that they have sent staff to the ATF to revise or eliminate at least 50 rules and gun regulations. Trump effectively legalized machine guns on May 16th. Trump agreed to a settlement that requires the DOJ to not enforce the machine gun ban against any device that functions like a forced reset trigger. And then Trump removed a memorial for gun violence victims. Last April, at the ATF headquarters in D.C., the ATF director Steve Dettelbach created a memorial to remind employees of the human toll of gun violence. The memorial featured photos of police officers killed by gunfire, children slain in mass shootings at Sandy Hook and Parkland, and other victims. And Lindsay, the Trump administration removed this memorial and the portraits of the victims hung in the ATF building's atrium.
Yeah, that's all correct.
Wow. And then to keep going down your list, so this is another one that's so important because we hear these Republicans constantly talk about mental health after there's a shooting. And yet Trump canceled $1 billion in school mental health resources. You all report that after the horrific shooting in Uvalde in 2022, Congress passed the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. Republicans worked on this with Democrats, and now the Trump administration is rescinding these crucial grants that give schools money to deal with mental health crises on campus. So what does this mean? I mean, I think we're going to have to do a show about this, but what is now happening with kids on campus who need counseling?
Yeah, it's very upsetting that for teachers and for parents and for the whole community when they see these kinds of situations that where kids need care, right? The kids need care, they need support, they need services. And it would be so easy to provide those services and that support if the communities had the resources they need. And in fact, there is a system in place to provide those resources, right? The Department of Education has historically been very involved in supporting our schools. There are people who have built their whole careers making sure that those kinds of resources get to the communities where they're most needed. And that is critically important. You know, the idea that resources should go where they're needed in order to be the most effective. And we have so many communities in this country that are face gun violence at a in a disproportionate amount, right? These are often Black and Brown communities. And they have a much higher rate of victimization from gun violence. And it's often a cycle, right? There's a cycle of re-injury and retribution that so many of our young people get caught up in. That's why my organization, Giffords, has worked so hard to support community violence intervention programs. Which work directly with these high risk individuals, and that through these programs that give them the support they need to put their life on the right path. The Trump administration recently dramatically changed the federal program. Called the Community Violence Intervention and Prevention Initiative, CVIPI, so that the community-based organizations that are most appropriate and most suitable to provide those kinds of services can no longer get, they're no longer eligible for these federal grants. That's a huge change that's going to severely undermine the progress that we have made in so many communities at addressing gun violence and community violence specifically. So I'm extremely concerned about that.
We recently had Tremaine Lee on the show, who wrote a book called A Thousand Ways to Die: The True Cost of Violence on Black Life in America. And he reports that despite making up 14% of the U.S. population, Black people account for 60% of those killed by firearms every year. And you can find that show at klw.org, click news, and then your call. Today, we're speaking with Lindsay Nichols, Policy Director at the Giffords Law Center. They work to end gun violence in this country. And there are so many shootings that happen every day in this country. You just can't keep up with it. In fact, a lot of this hardly gets news coverage. It does in the at the local level, but you really have to look for it. And so we're just wondering what happened to the conversation about gun control in this country. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at klw.org. And since we were talking about Trump slashing money for mental health resources, it's so shocking to learn, Lindsay. NPR interviewed David Reedman, who's a researcher who tracks K through 12 shootings. He's got the K through 12 school shooting database. And he says there have been more than 160 school shootings so far this year. He also says that so many kids live in homes where firearms are easily accessible or not properly secured. He says that there are students arrested with guns at school just about every single day. They don't have a plan to shoot anyone, but they bring it to maybe show off, or in some cases, they bring it for protection. I mean, that's shocking to hear. Every day, kids are arrested with guns at schools.
Yeah, it can be shocking to hear, and it is part. It all comes down to the question of guns being properly stored. Very often they're left unlocked. Sometimes they're even left loaded in places where children can have access. That's a serious problem that that we need strong laws and strong education to solve.
Well, let's keep going down this list from Giffords. And this is a very long list of what has happened under the Trump administration so far. Trump announced an executive order to undo gun safety progress. This happened in February. He called on the Attorney General to examine all orders, regulations, guidance, plans, agreements, and other actions of executive departments and agencies from Biden's term and come up with a plan to undo them under the guise of, quote, protecting the Second Amendment. Trump gutted the CDC and HHS, removing staff who oversaw critical gun violence prevention programs. Trump is spending resources investigating Tesla damages instead of addressing the number one killer of kids in the U.S. You report that Trump created a new Tesla task force full of FBI and ATF agents to respond to 48 instances of vandalism of Tesla vehicles. Meantime, the country struggles with a raging gun violence epidemic. And then this is one that, again, deserves its own show. I had to read this one twice. Nearly 1 million American women alive today report being shot or shot at by an intimate partner. Again, nearly 1 million American women alive today report being shot or shot at by an intimate partner. And Trump is considering a plan to allow gun rights to be restored to people convicted of domestic abuse. This news broke in March. Trump's DOJ says it was planning to restore gun rights for these people. Do we have any updates on this?
Yeah, there is actually an ongoing process for the members of the public to provide input on this. You can find it on regulations.gov if you're interested. It is an unusual situation here because we have a rule that's been proposed that would allow people who are prohibited from possessing guns for a whole range of reasons, not just domestic abuse, but also it could be old felony convictions, it could be old mental health issues. And just to be clear, some of these people should have the opportunity to present their case and present evidence that they have fully recovered and changed their lives and should be legally eligible to possess a gun. So I think to the extent the rule provides such a process, it's actually a smart move. There is certainly some concern specifically with regards to domestic violence. Domestic abusers, when they have access to a gun, it makes their victim five times more likely to be killed. So the idea of a domestic abuser with a gun should be horrifying for everybody. We hope that this new rule does not result in any domestic abusers regaining access to firearms. I mean, that could be really scary for any victim who knows that their abuser is able to access a gun for sure, and it could be deadly for them as well. So a lot is going to go into how the Trump administration implements this rule. We do have some hope that it will be done with public safety in mind, but we are also concerned that it might not. You know, we have seen the Trump administration make haphazard cuts and do some really reckless things in other policy areas. So we want to make sure as much as we possibly can that that particular rule is implemented only with public safety in mind.
And according to Giffords, every year more than 700 American women are shot to death by intimate partners. That is more than one every 12 hours. These numbers are just so... The thing that's so sad about this too, Lindsay, is more than 700 women. And this affects the entire family. You know, if she has children, obviously, and her entire community is affected by this. It's so... I feel like we say these numbers... 700 women shot to death by intimate partners. But when you peel back the layers, I mean, that's devastating, but it affects so many people.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it can have devastating long-term effects across their entire life. And not just for the victim, but also for their whole families, as you said.
Right. And also, we should say this does not happen in other countries.
Absolutely. You know, the United States really is unique in terms of its levels of gun violence among developed nations, which is one reason, one way we know that this is all preventable, right? With the right laws, we can have a society where gun violence is unusual. It is fully possible, and it is fully possible to have that with a strong Second Amendment and a strong culture and heritage of gun ownership. You know, there's nothing inconsistent about that. We just need the right laws to be passed so that gun ownership is limited to responsible people who can safely store and safely own their firearms.
Lindsay Nichols is policy director at the Giffords Law Center. They are on a mission to end gun violence. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable tomorrow, we'll discuss coverage of the U.S.-Israel Gaza plan and the intensifying Israeli military assault on Gaza as Palestinians are being forced to flee Gaza City under heavy bombardment. We'll also talk about a New York Times investigation about a lucrative transaction involving the Trump family's cryptocurrency firm and an agreement giving the Emiratis access to advanced AI chips. On Monday, we'll remember Dr. Jane Goodall, who passed away at the age of 91 yesterday. We will also talk about Trump's attacks on the wind industry and renewables in Democratic states. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation, we're asking, what happened to the conversation about gun control? What are your thoughts on this? What would you like to add? What questions do you have? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Lindsay Nichols, policy director at the Giffords Law Center. They are working to end gun violence. And now we'd like to welcome Chris Brown back to the show. Chris is president of Brady. They are also working to free this country from gun violence. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me back. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you, Chris. I read a piece that you wrote. You've got a Substack called Locked and Unloaded, and you wrote a piece called What Have We Learned Since Charlie Kirk's Assassination? And you write, in an only in America moment, a horrific school shooting that occurred virtually contemporaneously to the Kirk shooting has been almost completely ignored in the media coverage, sideswiped by a news cycle that could not seem to make room to tell the full story of America's gun violence epidemic. But it happened. There was a school shooting at Evergreen High School in Colorado. That tragedy left students traumatized and families shattered, but it barely registered in the national conversation. And you write, Chris, that in the days since, you've heard from people who had no idea that another school shooting even happened on the same day, let alone that two students were critically wounded.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I happened to be watching the news when the reports of Charlie Kirk's having been shot were first reported. And literally there was a flash on my news screen that there was a shooting at the high school in Colorado, and then there was no other coverage of it. And the point that I'm really trying to make there is one that all of us in the gun violence prevention movement feel, which is, given the shortened media cycles, how quickly stories move from one to the next, what we feel has been happening is much less coverage of everyday gun violence, because as you noted, and I was listening in to your conversation with Lindsay before, we experience it, the equivalent of a mass shooting every single day in this country. But it just doesn't get covered in the news unless it's sort of extraordinary circumstances. And we've all seen, you know, the manner of continuing coverage around the Charlie Kirk murder, which is absolutely horrific. But we have different aspects of gun violence happening every day, and in far too many communities across this country, experiencing the kind of gun violence, the frequency that really is only experienced by soldiers in combat. Some of those stories are never told, and they need to be, because there are, as Lindsay was noting before, there are very straightforward, simple solutions to materially decrease the rate of gun violence and injury in this country. And we need to not only demonstrate and show what's really happening, but what the solutions are, and then hold our elected officials to account when they don't move forward on those.
We'll talk about solutions in a minute, but I want to share a couple of details about what happened in Colorado. NBC reports that the 16-year-old suspect died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and that he fired 20 rounds in a 9-minute attack. So one thing we really need to be talking about is why, what is happening to young men? It's so hard to imagine as a 16-year-old that you wake up in the morning and you're going to grab this gun that has the capacity to shoot 20 rounds in 9 minutes and go to a school and shoot kids. Yeah. So we've got to really talk about that. But then the other thing in this NBC piece, the parents have anonymously, quietly talked about what happened behind the scenes, and you just can't imagine this. So a 14-year-old unidentified student who remains in the hospital after going through multiple surgeries had a face-to-face encounter with the shooter, who was filled with anger and hatred, according to the family. Their son showed a level of bravery, strength, and will to survive that no child should ever be asked to display. This is according to the family. The student and his friend confronted the shooter during the attack before the school lockdown or alarms were set off. And these two kids most likely saved other kids. You can't even imagine this. At 14, and that student was shot at close range and allowed other kids to run. Yeah. And it's just so sad that this is happening on a regular basis, Chris, and that we have to actually look for this story to find these details.
I completely agree. You know, I think hearing that as a mom, I have a 24-year-old and 21-year-old, and I have to tell you, as a parent, I breathed a sigh of relief when my kids were out of high school. Now I have one out of college, and I'm happy, honestly, about that too, because my younger daughter goes to Virginia Tech, the site of one of the largest and most deadly school shootings in the United States. It's very hard for that generation and those underneath them not to have, or younger than them, a feeling of dread about the risk of gun violence to themselves, others, their, you know, classmates, when active shooter drills are a regular part of their regimen. And basically, and I'm not trying to say, you know, don't ever do active shooter drills, but without actually addressing the source of the problem, which is gun laws that are in great need of continuing to be strengthened, what we're telling our kids in these drills is run, hide, and fight if you have to. And that's what that brave young man obviously did. But our kids' safety should not be resting on that kind of hope that, you know, a student will be able to encounter the shooter and stop that shooter from moving forward. And the focus on that kind of thing is hugely traumatizing to not a small percentage of kids who really are internalizing this in a way that that harms their psyche. And I'll just share with you one demonstrable way that I know this is true. I was talking to a mom who was so upset about what do I talk to my child about around an active shooter drill. She was a second grader. She went to pick up her daughter from second grade, and they had an active shooter drill. And she's talking to her child about it. And she said, well, Mom, you know, I've decided I can't sit next to Molly anymore. Molly was this little girl's best friend. And her mom said, well, why can't you sit next to Molly anymore? And she said, because she talks a lot, she's going to get me shot. This is what the takeaways from even these really young kids are. Mm. That's not freedom's safest place. That's not an America where our kids can thrive. And I think we all know that. That's why you see increasing across the country, red and blue states, Republicans and Democrats, men and women, embracing in larger and larger numbers these kinds of very sensible laws, expanding Brady background checks, extreme risk protection laws, permitting systems that they know work, that are entirely consistent with the Second Amendment.
Wow. Well, and Lindsay, just to add one more piece to this, because it's so important, at a time when Trump is canceling $1 billion in school mental health resources, the school shooting industry is worth about $4 billion, according to a recent NPR piece, and it's just growing. And this is the kind of stuff that you think would only be in a movie. The piece starts by saying, on a sunny day in Grapevine, Texas, three drones are buzzing around the head of a test dummy balanced on a pedestal. It's part of a demonstration outside the National School Safety Conference. Justin Marston, CEO of Campus Guardian Angel, this company selling drones, says, we use drones to stop school shootings. I mean, this is stuff out of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it's absolutely like things you never imagined. And it's things we really shouldn't have to imagine, right? It's our lawmakers should be protecting us from gun violence by enacting gun laws. And, you know, the our weak gun laws are making us less free. If we don't feel safe speaking out in public, if we don't feel safe in our churches and our places of worship, and if we don't feel safe sending our kids to school because we are afraid that they will get shot, we are less free. So I think the takeaway here needs to be that we need stronger gun laws. You know, we need stronger gun laws to change the situation, because we shouldn't be in a place where we have drones and we rely on drones to prevent to protect our kids and prevent school shootings.
Lindsay Nichols is policy director at the Giffords Law Center. Chris Brown is the president of Brady. And if you have any questions or comments, I would love to know also how you would like us to cover these issues, because we've talked about guns for years on this show. And how do you want us to talk about this? I can't believe it's 2025 and we have to ask, where is the conversation about gun control? Is it because Republicans are in office and the overwhelming majority of the money from the gun lobby now goes to Republicans? So it's got to happen at the state level. How do you want us to cover these issues? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show. David, I'd love to know, how do you want us to talk about these issues?
Oh, let me tell you, I'm 81 years old. I spent the vast majority of my time as a broadcaster in New York, Texas, and California. The thing about it is this. I love KLW. I'm going to become a contributor.
We're having some problems with your line. Hold on a minute. Okay, David, try again.
Okay. David Lamble, I've been a broadcaster for over 40 years in Texas, New York, and California. I've seen this issue covered for the last half century or more. It used to be that rock and roll stations had news departments and they covered serious news. Now, virtually all the news is on public stations. I think it should be on all stations. I think the Federal Communication Commission should mandate the community's statements by when they renew their licenses. Everybody has to contribute to this. All 27 FM signals in the Bay Area have to do it. It's great that you guys do it. You should be supported for it. But basically, people should not be able to escape this news, what's actually happening in their communities, and to arouse them to get to the ballot box and make sure that people like Trump are never elected to public office. This is, again, it's a beyond an emergency. And we've heard about the crisis in Britain this morning. My father was British. I feel like that's an extension of my life, too. So that's what I would say. This is an emergency. By the time the elections happen next year, people have to gird themselves to make sure that the people responsible for this kind of stuff do not hold power as they do right now with the government shutdown. That's what I can't say it more firmly than that.
Well, thank you for calling in, David. And I'm really sorry about his line. We're having some problems with our phones. So I think it'd be better if you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. Sorry about that. You know, to this point, this is the other thing that I just wish would be included in the broadcast stories about guns. It doesn't take long to say. It's not an opinion. It is a fact. The gun lobby used to give money to both Democrats and Republicans, but according to Open Secrets, the overwhelming majority of gun money now goes to Republicans. And Lindsay, this is just a fact, and it takes 10 seconds to say it. And I think the problem is because, you know, people are getting a lot of information from very different sources. And people in many, many cases are not informed. I keep thinking about a New York Times piece about how a pretty significant percentage of the population thought that Roe was overturned because of Biden. So people just don't have factual information in many cases. And it's not hard to say, according to Open Secrets, the majority of gun lobby money now goes to Republicans. That's just a fact, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question that it has been a significant shift over the last couple of decades where this issue, the issue of gun violence prevention, has become incredibly polarized. We have gotten to the place where it's very hard for my organization, Giffords, and other gun safety organizations to find Republicans who are willing to work with us to solve this epidemic of gun violence. On the other hand, we can really reliably work with Democrats who are interested in and looking for, actively looking for solutions to gun violence and to make our communities safer. That wasn't the case two decades ago. Honestly, we would occasionally work with both Republicans and Democrats. So maybe it is a symptom of something larger in our society, but it has made it very difficult. And it is in some respects, and it has shifted the attention towards elections so that people should know that when they go to the ballot box and when they vote, they may be making a statement about this issue, as well as so many other issues.
Chris, what would you add? What's your experience been like over the decades?
Well, I worked on Capitol Hill starting out my career as a legislative aide. And one of the issues that I handled was gun violence prevention. Jim and Sarah were lobbying to pass the Brady Law then. That was between 1990 and 1998 when I worked there, and it was passed during that time. And it was pretty much a challenge, at least at first, even to get moderate Democrats on board. That shifted over time. And I always like to remind people that when the Brady Law passed in the Senate, it passed by unanimous consent, meaning not a single Republican or Democrat voted against it. Admittedly, that was a high watermark. But I do think that at the federal level, extremist organizations, it's not just money from the NRA. A lot of people don't know that there are a whole host of different, much more extreme organizations that have represented militia interests and related kinds of interests, gotten very involved in advocating what can only be described as an insurrectionist view of the Second Amendment that is absolutely ahistorical and that is hugely risky. And they're giving money to primarily, if not exclusively, Republican candidates. And it is, you know, a real problem. I do also want to remind folks, though, we did pass the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act in Congress when Joe Biden was president. He signed it into law. We had 15 or 16 Republicans in the Senate vote yes on that. So we have had opportunities to move forward to really save lives. And when we do, it works. We saw, on average, 30 to 50% reduction in violent crime during the time and immediately after Joe Biden left office. That's not an accident. Wow. Stronger gun laws save lives. And let me just say, yes, the focus on the states, given the hostility with which President Trump is treating our sensible public safety gun laws, is critically important because we know stronger gun laws work. The states with the five strongest gun laws experience a 71% reduction in death and violence compared to the states with the weakest five states. That's material. People are alive today, not only because of what we've done at the federal level, but what we've done at the state and even local level, and that work absolutely continues apace.
Can you, in our remaining minutes, talk about laws that you would like to see that have proven to work? Chris?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that's heartbreaking here is so many different things that are happening at the federal level to undercut that reduction in violent crime, for example, with guns that has been material. And I'll just give one example beyond the various rules that have already been discussed of overturning the export rule that Commerce had that said that we weren't going to open up new exports to countries where we knew firearms from the U.S. would be diverted and used in criminal activity. And by the way, that feeds into people trying to flee their countries for the United States. The Trump administration is trying to overturn that. They're trying to make it easier for people who are convicted felons, convicted domestic abusers, to access guns. It's the wrong way around, but they're also cutting funds that have already been appropriated into community violence intervention, the suicide hotline, National Institutes of Justice activities, victims of crime. They've already cut $1.1 billion, with a B, billion dollars. And that's not even counting the additional cuts they're making to mental health treatment and school mental health counselors. So what we need to do is recognize that with Trump currently at the helm, we are facing unprecedented hostility to laws that we know work and try to shore up those investments in the states. We need to expand Brady laws in the states to ensure that guns can't be easily sold through non-licensed dealers. We have to strengthen permitting systems. We need to invest in education to communities across this country around the availability of extreme risk protection laws so that individuals who are at risk to themselves or others can have guns removed. And importantly, we have to normalize conversations about the presence of firearms in the home. That is all within our control. And that one in particular, I'll just conclude here. If everyone who had a firearm in their home ensured that it was safely stored, that's unloaded and locked, ammo separate, we could cut gun death and injury in half tomorrow. We don't need to pass another law. We don't need better enforcement. We need guns in homes to be safely stored so we end family fire and end this kind of carnage that comes as a result of easy access to unsecured firearms. Mm.
That is Chris Brown, president of Brady. They work to free this country from gun violence. Lindsay, final thoughts from you and any laws that you would like to see at the federal level? And we have about a minute left.
Sure. I will just say, you know, everyone deserves to be safe in their communities. In terms of like the big federal law, that is something lawmakers need to turn their attention to as soon as possible. They need the to make sure that, because it is really a healthcare issue, right? Mm-hmm. We know that there is this complicated relationship between healthcare and gun violence. Making sure that people have healthcare can actually lead to lower rates of gun violence, and lower rates of gun violence can protect people from the kinds of depression and other mental health issues that arise when they live in a society that's plagued by this dangerousness of gun violence. So I just want to say, like, we need to consider holistically gun violence as a public health issue.
And it's also important to point out that guns are now the leading cause of death for children and teens. And in June 2024, the U.S. Surgeon General issued an advisory declaring gun violence a public health crisis. Giffords points out less than a year later, the Trump administration removed the Surgeon General's advisory from the Department of Health and Human Services website, and, you know, taking away these resources and information from the public. We're getting a lot of emails about children and how they have to bear this now. And this wasn't the case in past generations. So we'll definitely do a show about how children are affected by gun violence in the months to come. Lindsay Nichols is policy director at the Giffords Law Center. Chris Brown is president of Brady. They both work tirelessly to end gun violence in this country. Chris and Lindsay, thanks for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show today, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.